time is being rewritten all around us, every day. People think their memories are bad, but their memories are fine. Past is really like that.
That's ridiculous.
Ah, now you're starting to get it.
Welcome to the 21st episode of Zero Hour Strikes. There are as many episodes as there are centuries after Christ. The show that covers DC's 1994 crossover event, Zero Hour Crisis in Time. Every issue, every tie-in, every zero issue. And I'm Siskoid.
I'm Bass.
And in this episode, we'll take a look at three zero issues that have some connection to the Teen Titans. Those would be Deathstroke, The Hunted, Flash, and New Titans itself. And and you're a fan of at least a couple of these.
Well, yeah, I am. I've been a Titans fan forever, and I'm a big Flash fan. So, this is straight up my alley.
Awesome. Is Deathstroke... I have real trouble saying that word. There's too many THs for my French language mouth.
Let's call him Slade.
I like to call him Slade because I think that's one of the better versions of this character.
Yep.
Slade from the Titans cartoon show. We've never discussed him, so we should take a moment. Is this Deathstroke the Terminator? Is he a character that you've ever liked?
Oh, yeah, big time. Okay. I mean, first time I saw Ravager in Teen Titans, he was attacking the Titans before Deathstroke even came over. And Ravager was fine, but when Deathstroke got there, oh, my God. I mean, he's just the coolest. You know, half the face is black and the other half is orange. I mean, the mask is wonderful. He had swords and guns and martial arts, and he was everything a ninja was supposed to be. And, you know, he was taking on the Teen Titans. So, yeah, he was badass. And when we got to know him a bit better, you know, we got to know that he was also he was basically a evil Batman or almost. So that was I really liked Deathstroke in the beginning. And I still kind of like him. I mean, somewhere in there, he kind of influenced the creation of Deadpool.
Deadpool is a straight-up ripoff of Deathstroke. I mean, they sound the same. They both have a similar... Even their real names are similar.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely, Deadpool owes everything to Deathstroke, and so Rob Liefeld owes everything to George Perez.
Well, yeah, and don't we all? And honestly, I mean, I love both characters. I mean, they came into their own all by themselves. Even though, you know, Deadpool is a ripoff, he's the funnier version of the ripoff, so... I love him for that, but Deathstroke is just, he's just badass.
To me, I wasn't reading Titans in the same era you were. Like, I picked it up later when Marv Wolfman was on the wane, and I've been reading an issue here and there of that original New Teen Titans run, that first volume of it, more recently. Like the first appearance of Brother Blood and the first appearance of Blackfire and, you know, like that era of it. I've been just reading spot issues like this and that. But I've always thought that he's got a cool look, but I've always liked him better in alternate media. So Slade is awesome as that like season one enemy in the Titans cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he worked really well. I really liked the character in the Arrow show.
Oh, yeah.
That version of it. But I've always been a little bit... I'm just like every comic book reader who doesn't really have a tie to that era of Titans. Whatever he's done, his two biggest crimes are being the father of Jericho, a character I dislike very much, and the whole Terra thing.
Yeah.
The suggestion of pedophilia, basically.
Yeah.
How do you reconcile that?
Well, that's a tough one because, I mean, this character, Jericho is not his fault. I mean, he's the dad, you know.
I would say that my dad is very much at fault for the worst of myself.
And I think in the Titans show, Deathstroke in that medium also is great. And I think Jericho is pretty awesome in that one also. Okay.
Because I've never watched the show. So.
Oh, the Titans show? Oh, it's, yeah, no. First season is whatever. It's very dark and very, very DC Universe. But the second season is quite entertaining. I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So if you can stomach season one, season two is a fun ride.
Right. And he's supposed to be in the Snyderverse as well.
He is also. And I think he was a cool version of Deathstroke. But yeah, the whole Terra thing, that one's hard. I mean,
you know what? Here we are at the Zero issue, the reboot, mm-hmm. the soft reboot of the DC Universe. And it would have been a great time to just wave that away, like say it never happened.
Yeah.
Change those details and tell us in some sort of flashback. Spoiler alert, they don't do that.
No, they don't.
There is no re-origin. We're just like a new phase, a new storyline begins in this Zero issue that we're going to cover. But it does not, there's no moment where let's think back to Deathstroke's origins and maybe tweak it. Like, they've removed Joe Chill from Batman. Let's mm-hmm. remove Terra from the Terminator origin.
Yeah.
Alas, that does not happen.
It doesn't. And that's a weird choice. I mean, I mean, you're going to give this character his own comic book. You're going to give him his own stories. And you're going to leave that in there? Ah.
Anyway, let's talk a little bit about his publishing history. He was created by Marv Wolfman and George Perez as a Titans villain, as you said, in number two of that first series. So he's very early on. He proved popular, despite the crimes we mentioned. He proved very popular in the age of anti-heroes. Well, that was his shot. So he was given his own series, Deathstroke the Terminator, it was called. That was in 1991. After 40 issues, Zero Hour happens. There's no tie-in issue for him. But with issue number zero, it becomes Deathstroke the Hunted. But once this storyline is over, it simply just becomes Deathstroke. So as of issue 46, so it's only like the Hunted for five or six issues.
Okay.
And then it goes to 60, and then it's canceled. So he would appear a lot over the years, including all that spinoff media, but he wouldn't get another title until the New 52, and then again in Rebirth. So he seems to be, you know, part of the universe now where there must be a Deathstroke series if we can have it. But I guess you could describe him as, you know, in terms of origin, as Captain America if he were an assassin for hire.
Yeah. Yeah. Captain America turned bad.
Yeah. He's like he's got like a super soldier serum in him that makes him more than human. But he's not exactly on the side of the angels. Although when you have your own series like he does here, or like Catwoman, they kind of find ways to make him more of a good guy.
I mean, I've always liked Deathstroke, but I've always wondered where he fits in the whole DC universe. Because he's one of these anti-heroes. He's one of these gray characters who's more on the darker side, of course. But he's still a villain.
Yeah, after he does this series, he's mostly used, I think, as a villain. Yeah. Like here, I'd say he's not exactly a villain because we're following his adventures. He's the protagonist. And, the Hunted. So he's pursued by authorities. But he seems to be doing things like the assassinations he takes on. And people who actually read this book can set me straight in the comments if they like, because I don't really know. I wasn't reading this. It's like assassinations, but he's going to be shooting like super bad guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he's going to pick his battles, and he's not going to go after so-called good or innocent people. Yes, he's working outside the law. Obviously, we don't want to see our heroes be assassins. He's an anti-hero in that sense, but at least, even if he's getting his hands dirty, he's still killing bad guys, let's say.
Yeah, or worse guys.
Or worse guys. And then after this, though, he finds himself into situations, if you look at the publication history, he's working with Luthor, or he's working with other bad guys, or with villain teams, or, you know, so he goes back to the darker side.
It really just feels like he has these, like, little glimpse of light, but then he goes back to bad. So he's like the ultimate bad boy, I guess.
I think as far as how he fits in the DCU, there's almost something I want to call the Marv Wolfman verse. Because Marv Wolfman has sort of this grip on certain characters, or has had this grip on the Titans. And then even when he wanted to leave the Titans, they didn't let him. So he was kind of spawning these other books that tied into Titans or used Titans characters or Titan-adjacent characters like Vigilante, like Deathstroke the Terminator. It feels like kind of connected. And we'll see even in these few books that we're going to touch on, there are two Marv Wolfman books, and they do connect. The storylines connect. So there's like this side, like this little insular bubble inside the DC universe where Marv Wolfman is playing with his toys and nobody else is really playing with those toys. unless he lets them.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem that we've mentioned before with Invasion and in here, where not all his books tie into the crossover. You know, I've admonished him for this because back when he did Crisis on Infinite Earths, and everybody had to tie into that. But when it came to Invasion, I mean, in our case, those are the ones we covered, Invasion and Zero Hour, maybe they won't.
Yeah.
Maybe my books don't need to connect to that.
Yeah, there is a Wolfman verse, I guess.
There's a little bubble. There's a little section that he controls. And as a popular writer, at least at a certain time, he was certainly a popular writer, kind of sort of been able to write his own course. Anyway, so let's look at Deathstroke, the Hunted. And I will actually finish the show with New Titans, which is also one of his books. So we get to talk about Wolfman a lot.
We have a Wolfman sandwich going on.
With a Mark Waid meat.
Filling.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So with Mark Waid's steak in the middle. All right. So Deathstroke the Hunted, number 0. It's by Marv Wolfman, Sergio Cariello, Keith Champagne, and Fred Fredericks. It's called The Hunted Prologue. Very simply, American authorities are converging on Deathstroke after he's assassinated a U.S. senator right in front of President Clinton on the information that said senator was a replacement for the actual man brutally slain by a killer sent by the crime lord of Zandia. Slade gets captured by Sarge Steele's forces, but is broken out by his friends, though now the hits on them as well. It's a very brief synopsis of what's going on. Let's first look at that cover, and then we can talk about the innards. What do you think of this? It's actually Scott McDaniel did the cover. So what do you think of this one?
Yeah, it's nicely stylized. I mean, all white is, of course, reminiscent of what was the whiteout from.
Oh, yeah.
So we have, you know, bullet holes and Deathstroke with a bloodied sword. Out of the whiteness, out of this big whiteout comes Deathstroke. So I kind of liked it.
I'm a fan of Scott McDaniel. I don't think this is a popular opinion, but I am a fan of Scott McDaniel's work. Generally, it depends on the book. I think when he was on Superman, it looked a bit too cartoony. But when he's like on Nightwing, I liked him. I like him on covers like this. He's like a poor man's Frank Miller.
Okay,
is one way to say it. You know, doing like working with shadows, like bright, like strong shadows that sort of suggest the shape behind it. You know, if you didn't color this, if it wasn't colored, then you could just kind of make out the figure because the colors are doing some of the work of like where the legs or the shoulder is.
Oh, most of the work, actually.
Yeah, because there's no line. That kind of like shadow stuff I like in general. I liked it when Frank Miller did it. I like it here. Mm-hmm. And he's sort of a more cartoony Frank Miller.
That's accurate.
Yeah, describe him that way. So I agree. This is a striking cover. The white and then just the lone figure and the bullet holes. I think it looks very cool. The insides, however, different art, obviously. Mm-hmm. A little more comic book realistic. So what did you think of this story? Where we were being launched into this new storyline and we haven't read the rest, obviously.
Most of the story is flashback and thinking about stuff. So we have a lot of stories within one story. So it's the start of something.
Well, would you have liked a more of a, like as a new reader that picks up number 0, would you have liked more of a origin, like at least a reminder of some sort of origin?
Actually, yeah. Yeah, because I feel like we've been parachuted in and we've been dropped in this story that's going on. And I mean, it's a great way to, you know, start a movie or something.
Yeah, well, or an epic in medias res, you know, like the Iliad. I'm not saying this is anywhere close to the Iliad, but, you know, it's like, let's start in the middle of things and then track back and still move forward. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of tracking back and sideways. But I would have probably liked the... And I know it sounds kind of crazy because we have, you know, we've seen the Batman origin story so many times that, and the Spider-Man origin story so many times that we're kind of tired of origin stories. But in the case of Deathstroke, I think we kind of needed one.
I wouldn't disagree because the two approaches that we've seen to date, because obviously the first episode of Zero Issues that we did was Batman, and they told us Batman's origin several times. Mm-hmm. This is one of the best known origins in all of, I don't even want to say comic book history, in history.
In history. You know,
in history, in the history of stories, Batman's origin story is one of the most famous. Everybody knows it. And we felt, rightly so, that they were wasting our time by telling us again.
Yeah.
In this case, Marv Wolfman kind of believes, either he believes that he will not pick up new readers, or that everybody knows Deathstroke. That Deathstroke is like Batman.
Yeah.
No, he's not.
Exactly.
Because even if you know he was a villain and maybe, you know, whatever, that he had a connection to the Titans, you would still not necessarily, if you weren't reading the book, you don't really know how he became more of a good guy or an anti-hero, at least. So I needed that,
yeah.
I think, to really jump on board.
We get like little bits of information of who he is, especially in these, in the square boxes, other conversations that happen when nobody's around, you know, other people talking about him. And we get to know a bit more of Deathstroke through these, you know, these boxes. But I mean, where is he from? What's going on? If I'm a new reader, I'm totally lost here.
Especially since we're going to meet a lot of his supporting cast. And I don't even know if that supporting cast was in previous issues, because he seems, you know, it's a bit like the Punisher, whatever. It's like, I need a contact, I suddenly have one.
Yeah.
And that character may be killed by the end of the issue, which happens to one character here. And you don't know, were they actually part of the comic before, or are they just there for this one story? And he knows people all over the world, and they've always got like some history with him because he's older. Yeah. And I think that's it.
And I mean, the only other person I knew Wintergreen.
Okay, I didn't.
I know the butler, but or his assistant or whatever.
Okay, so that's his Alfred.
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
But that's the only person I knew.
Well, I knew Sarge Steele, who is not in this supporting cast, obviously. He's like part of the manhunt.
Yeah. He's coordinating the manhunt.
And of course, I know Sarge Steele. I like that conceit where we're sort of hearing Sarge Steele talking to the president, seeing his emails, you know, with stuff like that, that are sort of setting up the manhunt.
Actually, that's pretty cool, though.
That's kind of fun. It's a good way to get us into the story as we see Deathstroke running around and avoiding black ops teams and whatever.
Yeah.
We're sort of promised that Checkmate will show up, that superheroes have been called in, but we don't see them here. I did check later issues. Hawkman shows up, your favorite. The Titans show up.
Yeah.
Part of the helpers, there's like the female vigilante, Vigilante 3, is part of the helpers that we see also on their plane or whatever they're using. You know, this hunted story will eventually include a lot more characters from the DC universe. But
yeah,
Here there's just a promise of it. So, okay, I'll accept it. The,
yeah,
the real villain, and we'll hear about this again in New Titans, is the Crime Lord. And the Crime Lord of Zandia, and Zandia is the country where Brother Blood and the Church of Blood comes from.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought at first that they kept talking about the Crime Lord, and I thought, is that just Brother Blood? Because he was always in shadow. He will eventually turn out to be Mento, Changeling's Beast Boy's stepfather. Who cares? So I didn't feel like this was this big spoiler. But the Crime Lord sort of sends agents, and he sort of framed, I guess he's framed Deathstroke. He's forced Deathstroke's hand, so that I'm gonna start saying Slade now.
Yeah.
So Slade very publicly kills a senator, or seems to.
Yeah.
Now all these agents look like Punisher parodies. They're so 90s. They're
oh my god.
Painfully 90s.
Oh yeah.
Like that guy with the big Omega symbols on him, and then there's another one later. And we see in Zandia that these guys are sort of like they're gladiators. They're fighting in the arena for maybe a chance at a contract. This is very much of the era. And
oh,
I don't know
God.
If it's parody or what.
It probably isn't. I mean, that's the beauty of this thing. This comic book is so, well, you know what? I'm going to say the same thing about the Titans later on. But this is so, so 90s. Everything in here is basically extreme. At the same time, wonderful and horrible.
Because any anti-hero book from the 90s is going to be horribly 90s.
Oh, yeah.
That is the era of that. And I mean, you've got like Deathstroke's naked through part of the issue.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of beefcake. Like his upper body is huge in those scenes. So
he has this prison built.
Oh, he's not naked. I see here on page 20 that tidy whities.
Tidy whities, yeah. He's so not a tidy whities type guy.
So why do they keep putting his crotch in shadow in other panels like they're hiding a penis? Anyway.
Oh, it's the suggestion of maybe he is.
This is, again, 90s, because the beefcake, the cheesecake, is part of the 90s formula. A lot of artists were like, doing, because there is a lot of, there's cheesecake as well, because we see how the senator, the real senator, got assassinated by this Omega Punisher. And it's like an S&M scene with a hooker.
Yeah,
she's got spikes on her bra. It's
it reminded me of my last weekend, but I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. It's a lot.
It is a lot. I mean, the one character that's kind of stood out in the supporting staff is Maurice.
Yeah.
It was a large person who, I don't know, seems to be, the suggestion is that this is a trans woman.
I didn't see it as a trans woman right away, but it really did feel like...
I don't know. I mean, the character has a sort of ambiguous quality and is very distinctive physically.
It's very New Orleans-y, you know.
Yeah.
I know they're in New York and it's Harlem and everything, but it's...
But that, that is a New Orleans kind of look.
It really feels New Orleans. I mean, I thought it was great.
And then they kill Maurice off.
Well, you know, the 90s.
Maurice is blown up. So it means that the whole team is basically on the run. So Deathstroke has touched too many lives and all these lives are now at risk. So really, the best bit about this is next issue, Deadshot and Bronze Tiger against Deathstroke. So now you're talking my language.
Actually, yeah, I had the same reaction. I was like, ooh, Deadshot and Bronze Tiger. Well,
yes, like suddenly I want to read the next issue. But that's the question. We have to ask this question every time now. Would you read this book based on the Zero issue? Bass is in back in 94. You've read this. This is supposed to be your jumping on point to Deathstroke the Hunted.
Yeah, you know what? I would probably pick up issue 1 or issue 41, the next issue. I would probably pick it up. Not necessarily because of this story. I mean, it's not a bad story. It's just there's a lot to take in. And if I didn't know Deathstroke, I would be completely lost. But I would have known Deathstroke because I was a Titans fan. And I probably would have read Deathstroke the Terminator. So, you know, I would probably grab the next issue, especially because we have Bronze Tiger and Deadshot coming in.
That is the reason to get the next issue. The Suicide Squad element is what might have gotten me to buy the next issue had I known. But I didn't buy this at the time. I think I've never been and will never be the target audience for a Deathstroke comic.
No, probably not.
I'm just not. I've read, I wouldn't say a lot, but I've read Punisher comics. I've read some Deathstroke issues here and there and these kinds of characters. But they never really grab me because it always feels like, I don't know, the storylines are sort of kind of self-contained or there's just nothing there to keep me interested. I think the sorts of stories that they get into are limited.
Yeah.
The villains have to die. You know, it feels like there's a very limited range of types of stories that these assassin characters can do. And I may be wrong. You know, it's just based on like the amount I've read, but it never really grabs me. So I might read an issue of Deathstroke. I might say, oh, I want to read this for Deadshot and Bronze Tiger. But then I wouldn't keep on doing it. I'm probably done. I came in for the Suicide Squad members and I'm out.
Yeah. And I think that's, unless you're really a fan of the anti-hero assassin type or you're rooting for the bad guy, it's probably not your thing. It's not my thing either. But I would probably be curious.
And maybe if you just read Hunted, and that's like 6 or 7 issues or whatever it is. Like a little mini series in a way. So we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk about The Flash.
Ooh.
Who here likes comic books? Who likes superheroes? Who likes superhero comic books? From the 90s!
That's what I thought. Hey there, I'm Nathaniel Wayne from the Council of Geeks, and though I've always loved superheroes, the only time I was buying monthly issues was during the much maligned 1990s. I've decided to go through my personal collection, issue by issue, and in my own little way, try to answer the question, were 90s comics really that bad? Chances are the answer will be yes, but I think these books deserve another chance, and they're going to get it on 90s Comics Retrial, part of the Council of Geeks podcast, available on iTunes and at 90scomicsretrial.wordpress.com.
So we're back. We're going to be talking about Flash number 0 and New Titans number 0. And as far as the Flash goes, we've waxed Wally West's boots already on the show plenty.
Oh, yeah.
But Zero Hour left him for dead. So as you remember, early on the crossover, he ran into the white void, or the wave, the Chronoton wave, or whatever that was, and he disappeared, and his fate was never addressed in the crossover series, which was, you know, at the end of Zero Hour, Zero Hour number zero, we were going, yeah, but what happened to Wally?
Yeah.
So we're going to find out in this case. Flash number zero by Mark Waid, Mike Waringo, and Jose Marsan Jr. It's called Flashing Back. Very quick synopsis. Thrown into the time stream, Wally West finds himself revisiting key moments of his life. He is able to deliver a message of encouragement to a younger version of himself. Then he begins his journey back to his own time. Simple enough. Let's talk about that cover by Mike Waringo. Got your Flash running, and in behind him, you kind of put a filter on it to make it kind of dim or like transparent almost. But we've got fractured time, and we see different things like his origin story and what might be Barry Allen, Impulse, him as Kid Flash. Not sure what's on the top ones. Max Mercury.
Yeah.
That might be Linda behind the...
Yeah, I think it's Linda. Yeah. I'm not really sure. And this type of fractured time look will be used again and again and again in Flash comics.
They keep breaking the reality.
Lots of time. This happens a lot of the time. So I think it's an iconic cover. I mean,
actually, you've used that pose.
Yeah.
That's the pose. Bass and I, of course, have role-played together. We've talked about this before, I think, but we did some superhero role-playing. And Bass's character, one of the Bass's characters, was the Jester, who was a combination of the Joker and the Flash.
Yeah. He was a Joker, super speedster Joker type.
Imagine the lightning hits the chemicals, and the chemicals were all like Smilex gas. Very cool character. And basically, when you drew him at one point, you basically stole this...
Yeah,
this it's Flash, exactly this. And then you change the costume, like you paint it over the costume.
In here, Wally has this like grinding teeth look, you know, but I turned that upside down and it became a smile.
You know what? I have that image somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you probably have that somewhere.
Yeah, so I'll put it in the image gallery on the site.
I think it's iconic. It's very much a Flash cover. Just looks nice. A lot like the inside art also. So it's beautiful.
So this is an origin story. They use the time travel to retell Wally's origin. There's no presumption that we all know it.
It's kind of fun because Mark Waid basically reinvented Wally's origin. I mean, the original origin was kind of boring, you know, same accident as Barry Allen, and all of a sudden a kid has the powers. So Mark Waid not embellished, but developed Wally's origin story. And I just finished reading Born to Run, actually, which is the origin story of Wally as the Flash. So this is kind of fun.
Is that from... It's before this.
It's before this.
Yeah, okay.
I get to see in this one story, Wally is kind of a ghost-like presence that's there and not there and there. And he gets to talk to 10-year-old Wally.
That's not in Born to Run, is it?
It's not.
Okay. It's not like he was planning this all along.
No, but I mean, the fun part is, you know, the costumes are the same. Wally, the way Wally's dressed in this comic book is the same as the way he was dressed in Born to Run.
They kind of did this on the TV show in a way to send, I mean, it's a very different, obviously it's Barry Allen instead. He has a different family life. But, you know, the idea that the Flash would revisit his own childhood. And in the show, he's trying to stop Professor Zoom from killing his mom. And we see it both ways, actually. In this, he also visits his, you know, at first, like he can't really be there. He's a ghost. Because in the DC Universe, in the Silver Age, and I think that's what Mark Waid is paying lip service to, you could time travel to the past. But if you were already alive, you were a ghost, so you could never interact with yourself. So that's how it is at first. He's just kind of witnessing events that he remembers. But then by the time he gets to childhood, maybe you can say there are no two adult Flashes. Like once he's not the Flash, then he's solid. Mm-hmm. I think that's what they do, right?
Yeah.
When his other self, when his past self is not the Flash yet, then he's solid. So like when he sees his origin, he's solid for a second, and then the lightning comes through, and then he's transparent again. And then he gets thrown back in time again. So this is kind of how he escapes the time wave. He actually was thrown back. And so he was I imagine he was eaten at the end when there was no universe anymore. But he wasn't actually destroyed when we saw him run into the void. He was thrown back and, like, the past still existed.
I mean, my theory is that when he ran into that white thing, he became one with the Speed Force. At this point, the Speed Force isn't invented yet.
It barely exists because the first appearance is apparently like a couple months before.
So yeah, it's the Speed Force is just a whisper at this point.
Right, like 0 hour was in the way, basically. The storyline started in issue 91, and mm-hmm. we're now, zero is actually between 94 and 95.
Yeah.
So it's been going on. That's why we see Max Mercury kind of skulking around, you know, because he's a master of the Speed Force. He's the Zen master. He knows about the Speed Force, but he hasn't revealed it to Wally yet. The Speed Force is just something that Mark Waid knows is going on, but that Wally doesn't yet.
Exactly. But Max, being the Zen guru of the Speed Force, he senses that Wally's around. So that's why I think that Wally is actually in the Speed Force at this particular moment.
Yeah, because he's sneaking up on him in the past when he's a ghost. Or the inference may be that he's spying on Wally last Tuesday where he's fighting Team Turmoil. You know, maybe he's spying on the actual Wally, but he may be spying on the ghost Wally as well.
We don't really know at this point.
Yeah, it's fun to see Wally as a kid, like pre-Flash, because we see that, like, he's been drawing images of, you know, drawings of the Flash. And also, like, there's a Star Trek insignia. So he was also a fan of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And this would be, they say he went back 10 years. So his childhood would be in 1984. So that's the year, like, of the Search for Spock. It would have been the last movie to come out. So that insignia, if you look at it, the Starfleet insignia has a circle around it, like, or behind it, like an oval behind it. And that's a TNG era, which would not have existed yet. But the pins on the movie era did have a sort of lozenge behind there. So I think he's drawn a movie era Starfleet insignia. This is something I care about. No one else does, okay?
I do understand this fascination with... Well, good job. I did not see that.
It's not the one on Kirk's shirt in the old series. There's no circle behind there. Anyway, but yeah. So basically, they sort of recontextualized the origin. Like, maybe in Born to Run, you didn't know about the Speed Force. It was a new thing. It came up later. Yeah. Here, it's like he sees something in the lightning that hits the chemicals. I don't feel like that scene is very clear, that there's like something bizarre about that. That he's seeing it in, like, in slow-mo because he's super fast, and he's seeing it differently. And he seems to clue in on something, but he doesn't reveal it here. So we have to keep reading to know what the insight was. But we know that insight will lead him to discovering the Speed Force and really developing new powers around that.
Yeah.
Like, they're not saying zero issue, Flash is completely different, but we're in the middle of that transformation. So we're taking a pause. We're remembering who this hero is. And we're putting in clues that will pay off later. But yes, the hero has been transformed. We just don't know it yet.
Exactly. And I really do enjoy that this, it's still a bit of a mirror of the origin story. Because, I mean, if you're not picking up Flash and you're picking up issue zero, well, you have a good insight on, you know, what's going on here. So I really enjoyed it.
And I know we both read this book before and after this point. So I think, like, our answer would be, would you be buying this? Yes, I was buying it anyway. Yes, I did continue to buy it. And this issue is a good example of the series. It puts us in the origin. The artwork is very fun to look at.
Oh, yeah.
And the mystery is developing. I want to see more Max Mercury. For all those reasons, I would keep reading it.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of like that Wally draws the Kid Flash.
Yeah, he time loops his costume.
So that's...
The costume would not exist if he had not drawn it.
Yeah, so that made me smile, actually. I was like, oh, yeah, that's cool. Because originally, the costume just changed for no real reason.
He dressed exactly like the Flash.
Yeah.
And then eventually he had that yellow one. And Wally is kind of giving himself the idea for the yellow one. In the history, he would still have worn the red one first.
Exactly. In the Silver Age, or whenever Kid Flash appeared for the first time. I mean, the origin story of that costume is just basically the costume changed. We have no explanation. We don't know really where it comes from. It just changes because it's easier to differentiate, I guess, Flash and Kid Flash, because they were all black and white or
black and white.
Not black and white, but they were both.
Red.
I read it in black and white for some odd reason. I don't know why.
Showcase Presents.
Oh, probably. Yeah.
That's The Flash. And obviously, we're already fans of this era of The Flash.
Well, I'm a big fan of Mark Waid's Flash.
No surprise. Back to Marv Wolfman, the New Titans. As we saw last time, the team was disbanding because most of the members didn't want to work for the government. And Team Titans was canceled. A zero issue is a good opportunity to present a new lineup of Titans. This is what this one's going to do. So New Titans number zero by Marv Wolfman, Stephen J.B. Jones, and several inkers. It's called The Changing Order. Goes like this. Arsenal, in a new costume, we'll talk about that, builds a new team composed of Changeling, New Kids on the Block, Impulse and Damage, and former Team Titans members Mirage and Terra. Their first mission puts them in conflict with Crime Lord's agents who have tried to make a bomb explode under the World Trade Center. It may have been a diversion because the bad guys pick off a senator on the steps of City Hall. The Titans stop them and Sarge Steel shows them their new headquarters in New Jersey, something that's secretly been arranged by Nightwing. Somewhere out in space, Green Lantern Kal Rayner is heading back to Earth and is spotted by a strange entity. To be continued. So let's look at that cover by Tom Rainey, which shows the new lineup, and Mirage is sort of casting an illusion that she's almost transforming into Kal Rayner. So that suggests that he's going to become one of the new members as well.
Well, you know.
Do you like the cover?
I don't. It's one of those extreme New Teen Titans, you know. It kind of wants to be the, you know, Perez type, you know, where you see the whole team running towards something. I mean, we've seen this Titan cover before, you know, where you have Kid Flash running one side, you have, you know, Cyborg on the other one, Robin's in the middle, and you have the flying people flying overhead and Raven in the back. You know, we've all seen this iconic.
Well, yes. When you got a new lineup, you want to present it with a group shot.
Yeah, but, you know, this one, well, it's kind of a weird, dark version of this, and I really didn't dig it. On the cover, we see Changeling, but we don't know he's Changeling, really. And this is a new powers type Changeling where he's like monsters and stuff. He's not really animals. Mm-hmm. We don't know that Arsenal changed his costume. So, you know, we see Arsenal, but we really see a guy with a gun.
He looks like Rick Flag.
Yeah, really.
He looks like Rick Flag. And then you've got, I think, Damage has really muscled up for no reason.
Yeah.
And what is wrong with Terra's boots?
I have no idea. Rob Liefeld?
Did
he draw this?
It's very strange. And of course, there's like that odd idea that Mirage is also being Kal Rayner, and that's part of her powers. This does not happen in the issue.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously can't, but I will confirm that Green Lantern will be a new Titan during this era. Which really, if we're talking about the group composition, I don't think that Impulse, who is very much at the start of his story in Flash and is going to get his own series, and that's where he's going to develop and become, like in this issue, I don't think he's portrayed particularly well. No. Because his own series is really going to develop how he thinks, how he is. And here they do stuff like his life was a video game and he doesn't take things seriously and fine.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like that's really Impulse, because later we find out who Impulse is, because Mark Waid is just creating Impulse in the pages of Flash at this point. Another writer using him at this very, at this embryonic stage. It's too early for him to feel like Impulse. So I don't think he should be in there. And that's true as well of Kal Rayner, who is very new as a Green Lantern. And I don't think a Green Lantern should be in the Justice League. A Green Lantern should not be in the Titans.
No, I agree. 100% agree. It just doesn't fit. I can't really explain why. I mean, we have very powerful Titans. That's not what I'm saying. It's just that being a Green Lantern is already, you know, like a cop job. And, you know, Justice League is like this ultimate task force, and Titans has another feeling to it. A Green Lantern just doesn't fit. It just doesn't fit.
I don't think so. And even Damage, I think Damage is like a new hero, but also very much an unknown, you know, where, okay, maybe this is going to give him a little more visibility that Green Lantern doesn't need, that I don't think Impulse needs, because he's part of the Flash group. So he's already in a team, which we might call Speed Force if we like. But Marv Wolfman doesn't play well with others. I mentioned this before, earlier in the show. And in this case, just the fact that they have to say that this story takes place 2 weeks after Zero Hour and 2 weeks after Damage Number Zero and Damage Number Seven, which is a month away. So in other words, when you're going to read Damage, he's two issues away from joining the Titans, so that's kind of spoiled. It doesn't quite fit with other books, whether that's Flash or whether that's Damage itself, or whether it'll be Green Lantern. So I don't think this is like the best way to do this. So you didn't like Arsenal's costume?
Already Arsenal is not really my favorite Green Arrow.
Like, do you mean you don't like Roy Harper? Or do you mean you don't like Roy Harper as Arsenal?
No, I don't like Roy Harper as Arsenal.
Okay. He's fine as Speedy or Red Arrow or...
Yeah, in my heart, I guess, he's supposed to be this legacy character. He's supposed to take up the mantle of the Green Arrow. You know, he's supposed to be...
I mean, if your mentor is going to be Green Arrow, maybe you just want to go your own way. Or they all did, didn't they? Yeah, Nightwing divorced himself from the Robin persona, and I think that's the idea behind Arsenal. But even his, like, goofy purple outfit, which he had in the previous issue, is better than this. This is so nondescript. He could be anyone. He's wearing shades that should fly off at the first moment of action. And I think he's very badly written, because his lines, his dialogue, is especially bad. He says things like, and I actually took down notes, he says things like, engage your butts. He says, we need backup. Get out of here. Which it seems contrary to... He calls the robots or the power armor guys Power Ranger rejects. So obviously he's never watched Power Rangers.
Obviously.
The Power Rangers don't look like beefy mechs, you know, unless he meant the big mecha that they turn into. But that doesn't make sense. So Marv Wolfman's never watched that show. And there are many pop culture references from different characters where Marv is maybe trying to be cool and hip. Like even Tara, who's supposed to be from the future, makes references to Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
Which, well, I think it makes sense if you know the future. Like, someone from 2020 would be making Keanu references, of course. But you wouldn't know that in 1994. So, you know, it's like, why is this chick talking about Keanu Reeves rather than something that is consistent with her own time frame and culture that she might have had? You know, she's got, like, these weird profanities. You know, she says words that don't really fit in the 1994 vernacular and is supposed to be future speak. But in this case, not. So I feel like the writing is very off as well, and especially in Arsenal's case.
If you're going to have a character who's going to go on his own and be the Nightwing to, you know, you have to write Roy Harper. You don't write Arsenal. You write Roy Harper. I mean, that's the beauty of Dick Grayson. If you write Dick Grayson, it doesn't matter if he's Robin, doesn't matter if he's Nightwing, doesn't matter if he's Agent Spiral thing he was in the New 52. It doesn't matter who he is. It doesn't matter if he's Batman. You're always writing Dick Grayson. I don't think we see that in Roy Harper.
I mean, Dick Grayson even had a book called Grayson.
Yeah.
To prove your point. With Roy, I don't know who, like, this guy is supposed to be. Like, I understand he's, like, the new leader of the Titans, and he doesn't necessarily trust himself to do that. Nightwing does trust him to be a leader. It's kind of that story where the non-leader becomes leader, and then he's putting all these lives at risk. That's supposed to be the story. I think they'd be safer if they closed their legs a couple times. But there's another problem I have is the way that people open their legs.
They're always in that power guitar playing stance.
Stuff like Roy jumps some turnstiles in the subway under the World Trade Center. And it's like...
And he's spread.
Yes. I mean, he's doing the split. He's Jean-Claude Van Damme jumping a turnstile.
Yeah.
That's not how I would do it.
No.
It's so easy to jump a turnstile.
That's not how you should do it.
No, why are you Spider-Man at this point? So, and then there's another bit where Changeling, he's spread eagle on the ground, been knocked out, and then the fire is just going towards his crotch.
I mean, Changeling is always, his legs are always apart. I think he has a problem. Maybe he should get some fungicide or something.
Chafing?
Or something.
Yeah.
All the characters that should be well-written in this, Changeling should be one of them. I mean, he's been, one of Wolfman's babies, and he's this dark, monstrous character who doesn't understand himself anymore, and at one point looks directly into, like, the camera. I don't know what's going on with Beast Boy Changeling over here. I really don't get it.
He's one of the most insufferable members because he's introspective and dark. Like, they took the character that was the fun-loving, quippy Spider-Man type, and they made him brooding. Yeah. And he hates it when the others are making jokes. That was you. And that's supposed to be the irony, but he's turning into a monster and he's becoming violent and a killer and he doesn't know what's happening to him. I don't like the storyline at all. It's like, you know what? Dark Phoenix should have been the end of it. We shouldn't have to suffer through Dark every character.
No, really not.
I'm over it. Now in 2021, I'm over it.
Oh my God.
At the time, I think 1994, I was pretty much over it because that was a big 90s trope as well.
Yeah, it's been overdone. I mean, that and zombies. We've had enough of zombies.
Yes, and I think like this and this, it does one of the things that we've criticized, at least I've criticized a lot over our two shows, and it's the character who makes comments, he criticizes the action and the other characters in such a way as to put ideas in your head that this is a bad comic.
Yeah.
Because if he says the characters are lame or the other characters are stupid or the other characters don't work well as a team, then you start to believe it as well. Or maybe it is true and you're going, yeah, so why am I reading this trash?
Yeah.
I agree with Changeling, even if I don't like his attitude. I agree with Changeling. This group is stupid. You know, so that's it.
Yeah.
We're done. So that's not a good idea. There is a certain frisson, I suppose, that the World Trade Center is crashing on Damage's head. And in retrospect, the storyline is disturbing because the terrorists are these even more 90s characters from the Crime Lord agents.
Yeah.
They're even more 90s. I mean, they look like Image characters, basically. Whether it's a feint or not, they're attacking the World Trade Center. So
94. So yeah, it's quite a bit before, but yeah.
Yeah. I had to do a bit of research on Terra because her only character trait is that she has the hots for Changeling.
Yeah.
And of course, this is a Terra from Team Titans. So she's a Terra from the future who is exactly like the Terra that we know, except that she's a good guy and not a bad guy.
Yeah.
But she has the same attraction. And he hates it because, of course, his Terra, that's done. And his Terra was a traitor. Well, if she's from the future, how can she be there? Who is she? And so apparently she was a clone of the original. And then it come to find out that, she was a clone. And this is going to be revealed later. She was a clone, but the Time Trapper grabbed her from the present and sent her to the future. And then she was sent back to the past with the Team Titans and during Zero Hour. But she really is from now, and she's part of something. There's like an elemental force of Earth that gave her powers or something. It gets as complicated as any X-Men storyline, so I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But this Terra seems to have that same. And eventually, I think either she dies or she has problems because she's genetically created, so she's got like genetic problems.
She probably dies of bad costume.
The
boots are big, they're bulky, they're like winter boots. Her legs are naked, she has like this bikini bottom, then she has like this full tight shirt but the jacket over top, and it makes no sense. I don't understand this costume. I don't get it.
Well, the artist is very big on inflating parts of people and things. So that, like, her boots are gigantic. But when you look at Impulse, he's got these huge arms and shoulders.
Yeah.
Which does not fit a runner and certainly does not fit the wispy kid that we know from the other books that he's in. Like, look at the page where they reveal the new headquarters. There's an inset. There's a building, and the building looks bizarrely sized. Like, it looks like fish-eyed. How big the top is, I don't know. There's a weird perspective. But even the inset, Terra is pretty small in front of Damage. Like, Damage is like a tall dude in the background, and she's a very short girl in the front. And then her boot, which is in between Arsenal's legs, that's immense. That's as big as his thigh, and he's at least 10 feet, 15 feet in front.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
Yeah, don't even look at Mirage's anatomy there. There's a
bad case of scoliosis.
Real problems. And when we get inside the base, like, they've got this new base, and we're told they've also got their satellite base. I didn't know they had a satellite base, but they've got a satellite base and this base in New Jersey. I don't know. If I had a satellite base.
Yeah, why would you live in Jersey? And this is 94 Jersey. It's not 2000.
Well, they put it in the park. The park that's right across from Manhattan. There's some nice greenery around. But the inside, I don't even know how that table works. Are you just sitting at a table and there's a giant letter T in the way? Or is it supposed to be like a print that has a 3D effect on it. I don't know.
I don't know. There are lights coming from under it? Or
I don't know.
And the chairs have no legs.
No, they're floating. So they're anti-grav. I don't know what's happening. There's monitors willy-nilly everywhere. So I don't know what the artist was thinking here. Similarly, you know, it's like this all across. So let's just say this is a very 90s looking book and leave it at that. You know, whatever. And then Marv kills another senator, the other senator who wrote the anti-terrorism bill that's referenced in Deathstroke. So the two senators who co-wrote a terrorism bill are both killed, but one of them was not the real senator. So one assumes that the crime lord has like made this bill pass and that it's going to have an impact on Zandia. This is going to have babies. This is going to be an important part of both Deathstroke and Teen Titans, or is he just, you know, maybe it won't really impact New Titans much, and it's just like a bit of crossover with Deathstroke in this case, in the Marv bubble, the Marvverse.
Yeah, it kind of feels like world building, you know, two books have like this similar or this same thing that connects them, but they won't necessarily be interconnected.
80s Marvel was like this. In Thor, they open the box of winter or whatever it is, and then every book that month there's winter, but they don't really reference it. So like New York, July, and there's snow, and then it'll say like see Thor whatever, making it like feel like the Marvel universe has been at different points very good at doing that. And Marv Wolfman, of course, was a Marvel writer before he was a DC writer, and one of the things that Teen Titans is supposed to bring is a Marvel feeling, an X-Men feeling to the DCU. So it kind of makes sense that he's working with those tools. But the question is, regardless of if it connects to Deathstroke or not, this is your first issue of the New Titans and this new lineup. It ends with a promise of Green Lantern. So are you reading this book from now on? Is this one you're asking the comic book shop to reserve a copy for you?
This one, no, I won't. And I'm probably pissed off that the New Titans have, you know, characters I did like in the past and now I'm not liking very much. I'll probably pass on this one.
So will I. 1994, I can't believe Marv Wolfman is still writing Titans. He was good in 1980. You know, eventually he kind of loses it. And I was reading Titans probably from 85 to 89, maybe, you know, something like that. No, at this point, I can't believe he's still, you know, writing these or this concept, because it's barely the same characters, but that he's still writing this concept. And this is the result. And this is what the art is going to be like. And I don't think this new lineup works for me at all, because the better characters don't feel like themselves.
It's kind of sad. I don't know if he wanted to write these characters or these books, or if he was, you know, pushed into it, or I don't know. But I think these characters were great. They would have been probably as good or maybe a bit better if they were passed on to a new creator, a new somebody who would use them and kept the essence. But in here, I'm feeling like I'm losing the essence of a lot of characters, and I don't like it.
I think the Titans who left the team were right to do so, because the Titans working for the government, you know, working for Sarge Steel, when half of them, at least half of them, are teenagers, just doesn't even make sense as a concept. So
yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's too bad, but we end on this downer.
Yeah.
We'll take a short break. When we return, happiness comes back. Your feedback on our previous episode.
Space. The final frontier. These are the recordings of the podcast Gimme That Star Trek. Its ongoing mission: to explore all of Star Trek, to seek out new guests and new opinions, to boldly go where many have gone before.
Gimme That Star Trek. A new episode every month, only at fireandwaterpodcast.com and on iTunes. Letters lost in time.
Letters lost in time.
Excerpts from your comments on our coverage of Batman. Well, the four Batman Zero issues. There were plenty.
Yeah.
So we weren't big boosters of those ones either. But Michael Bailey is quite adamant. He says, I am in the camp that Joe Chill as the killer of the Waynes, and Bruce eventually confronting him is the way to go. I hate the killer never getting caught. Hate it. Batman confronting his parents' killer is important for the character because it shifts his mission from being about revenge to being about making sure it doesn't happen to another kid like him. This was such a boneheaded idea.
Oh, wow.
And I felt like that issue that the Shadow of the Bat one, you know, he was making sure it didn't happen to those kids that he saves. I don't think one infers necessarily the other. You can have no Joe Chill and still have the Batman on track.
Actually, if that mystery still exists, I think it gives him a greater motivation, because every back alley crook with a gun becomes the killer of his parents.
But it doesn't mean that Batman is seeking revenge on that faceless person.
No, not necessarily.
But maybe that's how it turned out, because Chris Franklin agrees and he adds, a Batman who doesn't catch his parents' killer can project him on every killer and lead to a more unbalanced Batman, which is what we eventually get as the years move on from this. So there seems to be, this is the root of problems for Batman later on.
Mm-hmm.
He also says, Shadow of the Bat lost something when Breyfogle left DC for Malibu and the Ultraverse. The title was created for him and Alan Grant after the successful runs on Detective and Batman. So create a book for someone, then he leaves. On the Joe Chill question, David A. Gutierrez goes a different way. Says, I always liked the idea of the Wayne murderer being the one case Batman couldn't solve. It gives him a drive and a purpose. Of course, I think he's nuts, so maybe that plays into it for me. I think if he found out, saw that Chill served his time or died or whatever, it would give some closure to Wayne and there'd be no Batman. I don't think Batman would, at this point, stop being Batman.
No.
He did a lot of that in like the 60s and 70s. It's like, I'm not Batman anymore. But, you know, those are like one and done's where he stops being Batman and he's Batman by the end.
Yeah.
They wouldn't
do
that in the more serialized current era.
Of course not.
No, he'd find another reason to do it. Boy, Marvel Zombie Ryan Daly reveals. Says, I didn't read Zero Hour, but I remember when all of these Zero issues dropped that month, I ended up collecting a whole lot of them. I was tiring of Marvel and looking to see if the DC characters would pull me in, and all the Zero issues seemed like a good jumping on point. Plus, I liked all the shiny silver Zeros across the books. Alas, these books in general did not make me a DC reader. And Ryan says he had been reading the Batman books for years, up through Nightfall, but this era marked the end of his Batman phase. A lot of what Diablo Frank tells us about Batman in this era, he repeated on a purportedly drunken podcast over at his own Rolled Spine podcast. So I listened to it and said, oh, yeah, he's making the same points, just more angrily.
So with clenched teeth.
So you might want to check it out. But he summarizes it in his last paragraph, which I'll read. It says, the problem with Batman was that the same group of guys wrote the character for so long that it solidified who he was to a generation of readers and then writers. He's the abusive father figure of a dysfunctional family made up of sometimes disposable orphan boys and the odd Tom girl who'll get extra mistreated. He's irreparably broken, incapable of having normal relationships or progressing past his obsessions. Bruce Wayne is the mask and Batman is the real wank wank drizzle. He really will become the creepy old man with the incessant simmering anger and a dog living in a cave and still luring in stray young men with his money and gadgets to do his bidding after hours. He'll never progress further. A stunted, flaccid, bitter old Bat Queen offering no better solutions for society's woes than fists to the face and the odd charity gala. He's somewhere on the spectrum between Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, and if either is your hero or welcome company, reconsider your priorities and values.
Well, now.
This is what Chris was talking about, or even Michael, before.
Yeah.
I don't think Joe Chill is the problem. Truthfully, even if you had Joe Chill, and you could still keep writing Batman as this vengeful, I am the knight figure. It's not, especially since the movies are going to like really cement that. So this was going to happen no matter what. But I do agree with Frank here, like Batman eventually becomes just this one color. Everybody wants to do a Batman story, and all those Batman stories are kind of like use them in the same way. And there was a lot more variety before, or there are different ways to do Batman. And I'm glad for things like the Brave and the Bold cartoon and that use Batman very differently and tell us that Batman can exist without being the Knight. Ward Hill Terry says, I've been listening to many podcasts lately about post-crisis Batman. Nothing I've heard about these stories has made me regret my decision to stop buying Batman and Detective in the late 1980s. He particularly criticizes the lack of Joe Chill and of Alfred in this particular era. I think Alfred was coming back pretty soon, though. I can't imagine.
Oh, yeah. They were teasing him. He was going to come back. If he wasn't, that was just cruel.
Isn't he dead right now?
I think he is.
Yeah, that's not going to last. Captain Entropy was the one who asked you the question about Green Arrow, and he apologizes somewhat for putting you on the spot, Bass.
Good. I accept that apology.
But he says, but your response was both honest and vastly entertaining, so now I regret nothing.
I live to entertain.
And new listener Santiago says, you have no idea how much I'm enjoying this podcast. 0 Hour is the best book ever, and you are great. I was like, really? And then he says, I just finished episode 2, but quickly catching up.
Oh, we'll ruin that.
0 Hour is the best book ever.
Oh, yeah.
We may not agree. We may end up not agreeing.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, but you know what? High fives.
Hello from the future. And on that note, I guess we have to mention that the Fire and Water Podcast Network has a Patreon page. If you like our content, please think about making a one-time or monthly donation, the amount of which will allow you to unlock rewards. Get on our zero list at patreon.com/FW podcast, just like these folks did. They got on the zero list. You know what that means? They're going to escape the cataclysmic time wave that's coming for both ends of history. We'll end up with only 4 listeners, best because of this.
Well, maybe they'll end up not being written by Marv Wolfman.
Well, Jim Bao has been saved from Atlantis, just as it goes under. David Capoon has been saved from the DC Universe's version of Canada, but I really don't know from what. Michael Bailey has been saved from Space Cabbie's Fare, which was pretty steep. And Diablo Frank has been saved from the Oblivion Bar, where the magical bouncers were looking at him oddly. A reminder that you can leave us comments at fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also follow Fire and Water on its Facebook page and on Twitter. The account is FW Podcast. You can also now find the podcast on Spotify, if that's what you like. Thanks for listening.
Next time on 0 Hour Strikes, the Legion's 0 issues, including Lobo.